Anytime there's a mannequin involved, I'm interested.
Unless it's a challenge. That's the dumbest fucking thing.
I have not seen that. So I don't
You haven't seen the mannequin challenge? Well, you're not missing anything.
So it's just a bunch of people and they will all just...
all pretend to be mannequins.
Yeah, but I mean, it's...
Somebody said, he was like, yeah, this has already been done. It's called a photograph.
Yeah.
The Dallas Cowboys did one, like their upper management or whatever, but they're all... 80 years old, so they're just like...
Oh, yeah, but they're also on a private jet, so it's probably got turbulence or whatever, but it's like Jerry...
Yeah.
Whatever his name
Former Abercrombie and Fitch models at the store. Store that models. Those guys. Better. Remember those guys?
Yeah, they take their shirt off.
They just stand in their underwear, and they just... How much pussy did those kids get?
Oh, fuck.
How much mall pussy? How much mall pussy?
I'll say this. I worked at Abercrombie and Fitch for a summer in the back... because my buddy was the stockroom manager, and we went back there and we would fold clothes, and I never felt more empty as a human being than have to answer questions about, like, my shoes. You know, like, how do you feel like your shoes are coordinating with your outfit right now? Like, you know what I mean? It's like I, as a pizza maker, you know, maybe I'd be like, how do you feel like this pizza looks like the pizza we asked you to make, or whatever. But, like, I just felt so...
What, your boss would ask you that?
Yeah. It was really, yeah, and I got rode up one time.
Because you clashed?
Because I clashed a little bit.
Really?
I wasn't an Abercrombie guy. I was just helping my buddy who was the stockroom manager. You know what I mean?
So you worked in the
back? Yeah, yeah.
Why does it matter?
Yeah, who gives a shit if you have shoes on?
It didn't really, like, work with me, so I just, like, left for lunch the day they wrote me up. I was like, okay, I'm taking lunch here soon. And they're like, okay. And I clocked out, and I just never came back. That's the only job I never said, like... hey guys, I won't be back. It just like left.
Oh, I've quit. I was working construction. You can just fucking, you know, whatever. But anyway, so this guy, he was like down in Middletown building this house in this. First of all, I quit this job working across the street because the guy just like yelled at me. He's like, look, dude, when I fucking tell you to do something, you fucking do it. And I was like, all right. So I just took my tool bag off and I fucking walked directly across the street and started for that company. And then, which is weird because I worked for that guy for like a year or two. And then, so like, now these guys I used to work with are like driving by. And I'm fucking like, wait, morning, guys. Like, anyway, so then I'm working for this guy, and he's a raging alcoholic. And that means something coming from me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So we went out and smoked a joint at lunch. And he comes back in and he goes, yeah, you got to you guys got to quit fucking smoking that weed at lunch or whatever. He's like totally against it. And I was like, all right. Just took the tool bag off, walked back over across the street, fucking started back with them. And I was on the roof. And it's like a walkout basement. And then my fucking tape measure falls out of my tool bag and it just starts bouncing down. And I mean, just as it's going over the edge, this fucking kid walks out. And I mean, I'm going to kill his butt.
Yeah.
Right on top of the fucking head. Just, I was like, oh. But he had just started, so he's like, no, it's cool, man. Yeah. Just dropped a fucking 25-foot tape measure 30 feet and just right on top of the head. It was great.
That's my luck, is to get hit with the tape measure. I've taken a lot of, like, blunt objects to the head unexpectedly. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's why I am the way I am.
Annoying?
I worked construction one summer. Framing houses.
How old were you?
I was maybe 20.
Yeah.
No, I was 21 because I could go to a bar and drink.
Okay.
Because that was a big part of it. Like, when it starts raining, when there are a lot of clouds at 9 in the morning, that means it's time to go drinking when you work construction.
Yeah.
Framing, especially.
Yeah, because it's like, well, we can't work out here in the rain.
Yeah. Can't be swinging this fucking lightning rod in a thunderstorm.
Yeah, so we... so we did that about, so I had to be 21 because I could go do that. But one time we were, you know, we didn't even have the walls up yet. We just had the wood foundation up of like the floor and shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And on top of the concrete block slab. And then somebody threw, I needed something. So I said, hey, toss me a 4x6. And somebody tossed me a 4x6 and it bounced weird. And then just went boom straight up, and then hit me in the side of the head.
Ooh. Oh,
I had like a 2.5-inch slice between my sideburn and my ear. It's on one of these. I still have a scar there, And boom, I went to urgent care, got a little bit of workers' comp. It was nice.
Couple Percocets.
Yeah.
Best fucking job.
Luckily, I wasn't fucked up or high or drunk.
Yeah, because that'll cancel all that good right out.
Yeah, so, I mean, but, like, my boss was the one being like, hey, Dino. He called me Dino because he thought I looked like Dean Martin. He knew I wanted to do stand-up, so he called me Dino. He'd be like, hey, Dino, you want a raise? And the first time it worked. The first time he did this on me, it worked. And I was like, hell yeah, boss man, I want a raise. And he was our neighbor. He lived right across the street from my dad where I lived. And he goes, okay, hit this joint and build the roof. I was like, what? He goes, I'm going to get you high before you go up high. You're getting a raise. And then I've never clung to like just no roof, just the rafters before the roof was built, and tried to, like, I don't know if you've ever tried to hammer one-handed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't
do it.
Hard
to start a nail. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. You can't. But I tried. I tried my damnedest to, I'd put the nail down and then as I'm just, cause I was just too high to, like,
too high like to I be wasn't up that gonna, high.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that.
What's
I
that?
Wasn't.
What's up, man?
How's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Up, brother.
In the middle of a,
yeah, and you're fucking it all up. What do you need? Come on in.
All right, well, since I'm here to fuck it up.
All right.
I'm just going to say thanks for putting me on, man.
Yeah, man. I heard this would be your third time on stage.
Third time.
And how'd the first two times go?
Good.
Yeah? And so far, so good. You did Rocky's Pizza.
And then Hookah Bazaar.
Hookah Bazaar. Right. Those are both the staples now in town. And so tonight, you'll probably go up second or third, you know, 5 minutes.
Don't fuck it up, man.
Yeah, just as long as it's really, really funny.
If it's fired.
Yeah, then you'll never perform here again. So there's no pressure.
Right.
No pressure. And you got any questions or anything?
No. I think it's all pretty straightforward. Yeah, you know, I'm pretty excited. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, show them your dick and they laugh. That's how it works.
That's a classic move.
Or wet your pants.
Bent down. Just don't talk about milkshakes.
I wanted to close on the asshole.
If you open on the asshole, where do you go from there?
Exactly. I figured it's a good closer.
Good job.
You know?
Good job.
Yeah.
I've got a little stain in my underwear. Just a little one, though.
Now I'm concerned.
Just to show them I'm not perfect.
Well, I mean, you just gave away your setup. That's all I'm saying. Gave away the setup, so now I know what
perfect.
To look for.
Well, can't be perfect.
All right, well, save that's the rest of it for tonight. Save the rest of it. Are you wearing those shoes tonight?
No, I got to go home and change.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Just make sure.
Didn't we just have this discussion?
Anybody need any plumbing? All right, cool. Well, we're sitting here with Ryan Singer and Jay Snyder. And Ryan Singer is by far the most famous person we've had on the podcast so far.
Oh, wow. You guys haven't had anybody on the podcast so far.
We've had a couple, but nobody.
We've had Tom Dustin.
We had Tommy Dustin.
Tommy.
Joe List was on the podcast, and a couple. I had Greg Morton and a couple other guys. I don't want to step on any toes, but nobody that's been on the Marin show yet. So I think that automatically puts you into a stratosphere of you've been interviewed and you're friends with a guy who met the president, and that's so now, like, now.
Oh, that's right. I'm 1 degree away from
from
Barry.
You're basically Barry. Black, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, like,
you're
hell
like
yeah,
my black friend now.
You know, me and Barry share the same birthday.
Oh right? Yeah,
yeah. So I tweeted him one day like, "Hey, stop by Dayton. We'll have a St. Ides." never stopped by. But I also me and Steve Forstoffel when he was down in Cincinnati, I tried to call. I called the White House. And I wasn't expecting him to answer the fucking phone. And that kind of threw me off. There's like, White House, whatever. I was like, oh, yeah, is Barack there? I didn't know. I panicked.
Yeah. You went straight.
Yeah, they definitely got someone who answers the phone.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a voice.
Because, you know, most of those are like, I got a bomb. I put a bomb on that.
Yeah.
Basically, they're just waiting for you to tell them, how are you going to kill somebody?
It's the fastest tracing phone line in the fucking country.
Yeah, they probably have it before they answer the phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Exactly.
This is coming in from the Cincinnati Funny Bone. What the?
It's me.
What the fuck? What if it's Michael Winslow? We were down there one time, and he goes, you know, a lot of people don't know who he is anymore or whatever, but. Yeah, I don't think he realizes that. But so they had that place underneath that had that, like, mechanical bull or whatever.
Mm.
And he goes, their music's too loud. He goes, go have them turn the music down. And I was like, is that a thing? And I was like, so I just went over to Steve. I was like, yeah, man. He said that their music's too loud. Once you turn it down, he's like, all right, I'll call him. I was like, I guess that's a fucking thing. Anyway. They turned it down a little bit. The next night, show's about to start, and he goes, yep, that music's too loud again. He goes, this is really going to affect the outcome of my show. And he goes, all right, come on. Fucking grabs his hat, puts his jacket on, and he, like, goes down there, and he's like just standing there in front of the bouncers, and he goes, yeah, I need to talk to your manager. And he's just standing there very smug, and he goes, they go, which manager? He's like, whoever controls the music. And this little short fucking feisty woman comes out, and she goes, yeah, you guys called down here 3 or 4 times last night. She goes, just so you know, I'm trying to run a business here too, or whatever. And she's like, I can turn it down a little bit, but that's all I can do. And she just turns around and walks off, and he's just standing there staring. I was like, oh, she just, you have, oh, and he goes, I'm Mr. Winslow. He said that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I've only had one time in my life where I was interpreted as doing that.
As being like a big deal?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't aware that I was coming off that way. Mm-hmm. And I was at, there's a little dive bar in my neighborhood. They do karaoke on Friday and Saturdays. And every 2-3 times a year, maybe, Dave Waite and I will try to rally a bunch of comedians to kind of all just, because if you get 30 people in there, it's the bar's full.
Right.
And so a couple times a year, maybe, we'll just get 30, 40 comics down there, and it's just a really fun time. And really bad karaoke and, yeah, yeah, and everything. And like the VJ or the KJ's name is Fabio. I mean, like, it's a great little dive bar. And Dana D'Armond came one night, who's a famous porn actress. She's friends with a bunch of comics, right? Through Twitter, nice, and stuff. And she shows up, and I haven't watched porn in, I don't know, it's probably been 6 years. It was when I stopped watching porn, for the most part. Like, it's rare that I haven't seen, like, an actual porno thing in forever.
Right.
And so I'm not familiar with her work. But I do know who she is.
Yeah.
And I know, because I follow her on Twitter, and we follow each other on Twitter, all this other shit. She shows up, and, like, she's a total babe. I mean, of course she is.
Right.
Right? But, like, you don't realize, I didn't realize, like, the level of
hotness.
Babe she is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, this woman is really attractive. I guess she's, like, famous for anal stuff. And I'm like, she's a total babe, sure. But then I meet her, and I'm just like, and she's like, hi, Dana. And I'm like, hi, Ryan Singer. And she goes, oh, I'm supposed to know who you are? Is that why you said Ryan Singer? And I was like, no, I'm just, like, trying not to just talk about how much of a babe you are.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But I didn't say that to her, obviously. And then so I ended up buying her a drink, and everything was fine. But, like, that's the only time I've come off as, like, I was, yeah, like, oh, Ryan Singer. Yeah. She goes, oh, Ryan Singer. Like, oh, I'm supposed to know who Ryan Singer is?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she just said it to my face. I was like, this is why she's awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
Instantly breaking your balls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's known for anal because she just ripped my ass.
Yeah. But she's like really funny and like cool. Anyway, she you should follow her on Twitter and Instagram. I mean, because she's got new boobs too. Like, she's beautiful.
Do you like the fake boobs?
I don't discriminate.
Yeah, as long as there's nipples. As long as there's at least one nipple.
One nipple is all we need.
At least one. Yeah. I don't care if there's more.
Even
than
if
that.
It's in the middle of the two.
There's no. There can be as many as possible, but a minimum of one.
A minimum of one. Yeah,
I'll take that.
It don't even have to be centered. It can be off to the fuck. You know.
I've noticed that as I've gotten older, my taste in breasts has changed in terms of life. Like, I prefer a woman who's a little bit longer in the tit now. When I did when I was younger.
Wait. I mean, I'm familiar with the phrase "longer in the tooth."
Is that what it is?
Like a wiser person, but I'm not familiar with the phrase "a woman who's a little bit longer in the tit." I've never. What does that mean? Like, you like boobs that are kind of like almost like
slinkies.
Or slinkies, or like tennis ball canisters.
No, not like the sock in the end of a tennis ball, kind of. Not like where gravity has done horrible things, but just I don't need them. Like, as far as like a fake breast is concerned, or an artificially inseminated breast, can sit up too high. and almost be too pointy, almost be too in your face.
Oh, too mannequin-y.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I need some natural slope to...
You know, like them to be able to, like, change shape depending on if she's bending over,
exactly.
They look different,
exactly.
Or she's laying on her back.
Yes. Exactly.
Then they kind of...
If they disappear
they pancake
when she's
out,
on her back,
or they tube
okay.
up when
yeah.
she bends over.
Oh,
or
that's tube up. That's a really... That's what I'm not...
Long in the tit.
Long
in the tit.
not tube in the tit. Necessarily, but I, you know, I'm just happy to be able to see a tit every once.
I like a militant titty.
I'll tell you this: the last gentleman's club that I went into, I walked in and I walked right back out because they had the pasty things on or whatever, and I felt that was so like unnerving to me. I was just like, yeah, that's disgusting. Looks like they had like Band-Aids on. I was just like,
I can see her tampon string, but I can't see her nipples. I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah,
you got to draw a line somewhere, you know. As far as what you're willing to appreciate.
Gosh, boobs are so good. Someone just told me, I just had this conversation last night with my ex-girlfriend, who's like one of my best friends. We all know her, Erica, mm-hmm. who's here. And Ruth, her girlfriend. And she said, and something happened, we started talking about boobs or something. And I was like, oh, talking about boobs? And she goes, you're 40 years old, but like you still talk about boobs like you're 12. And I was like, that just never goes away, probably.
Yeah. If it does, shoot me.
Yeah, I mean, and I've had, like, such little, like, what do you want to, like, it's such a bro way to say it, but, like, such little action.
Uh-huh.
Like, I had a period in my life where I was kind of, like, struggling with sex and love addiction. Probably. It was never like, I didn't go to meetings, but I read this book, and a friend of mine gave it to me because he was concerned about my behavior. So I read this book, and I realize I need to get control.
With, like, too many relationships?
Too much, just reckless, yeah. Lying to people about what I'm doing to cover up the shame that I feel for what I'm doing. I knew I had to get control of it when I showed up at a woman's house in Los Angeles from Tinder. And she was a different woman than I thought she was when she answered the door.
Yeah, you thought you were going to see
her. And she wasn't attractive, but it didn't matter to me. Like, not that she wasn't attractive. I wasn't attracted to her.
Uh-huh.
Big difference.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this woman, so I could have just... I'm like, you know, I could have just been like, you know what? I'm sorry. I've changed my mind and turned around and walked away. No big deal. But I didn't do that. Instead, the first thought that popped in my head was, oh, I gotta talk to my buddy... and find out where he gets his Viagra. Because I'm going to keep fucking people. I'm going to keep having sex with people I'm not attracted to.
Yeah.
So I just need to have add another addiction into this to keep this addiction mm-hmm. going.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh. And so then I told a friend of mine about that because I had actually lied to him about being able to hang out. A friend of mine wanted me to go to a show with him. He was doing a set at the Comedy Store. I was like, oh, man, I got a set. I can't do it. But in reality, I had two different women lined up. Or like a boom, boom. Like a, you know, with enough time to go shower and stuff in between. And strangers who I'd never met. And then after the first one, I was just like, I canceled the second one. And I called him. I was like, hey, do you want to go get food? So it was late night diner. And I told him about it. And he's like, man, you're fucked up.
Mm.
He's like, luckily, I'm fucked up too.
Yeah.
And I've got a book you can borrow.
Oh. What was the book? You give it the book.
It's called Out of the Shadows.
Out of the Shadows.
It's about love and sex addiction. And, oh, man. And then, but so, like, since then, it's been a couple years.
Yeah.
I've had sex with, in the last 2 years, I've had sex with two women. And the second woman was once. And now I'm like, why am I not dating the other woman?
Yeah.
Like, but...
that is a curious thing.
Right?
Do you still contact?
No, we are in a no contact phase right now.
Okay.
Which I think we will maintain for... in perpetuity, as they say.
Ooh, nice word.
So...
it's like long in the tip.
But yeah, but the problem is, once you... and I don't want to put this out there because I'm not going to own it,
right. But
I'm saying this is a potential situation. The problem could be now once you realize that your dick gets hard for dysfunction.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Now when you have a healthy situation unfolding in front of you, I think we can I can potentially mistake it for boring and not interested, mm-hmm. as opposed to, oh no, this is what healthy feels like,
right.
as opposed to like, oh man, why just get a fucking, you know, yeah, like, oh what, oh what, oh, you want to go, oh my god, my fucking, you know, whatever. But like, I just hope that my, because I have talked to some people and they're like, dude, once you
go that direction,
once you get your dick hard for dysfunction, there's no going back. And I was like, well, that's what you can believe. I am choosing not to believe that.
Right.
Because I don't want to have to live my life like that.
Yeah,
the rest of my
life.
I'm not going to be 70 years old trying to like,
yeah, swiping
send right. like jerk off videos to people just to be able to get hard. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not living yes. that life. I'm
That's
not going to live
commitment.
That. Yeah.
That's a huge commitment.
You know, you want me to send you a dick hologram, a dickogram or whatever? Because by then it'll be holograms if
oh,
you're
yeah.
dead.
Right? You're our only hope, you know, kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like, droom. So, that's fascinating. So, what...
I don't even know how we started talking about that. Oh, we were talking about boobs, and I'm talking about how... Because I was thinking about how few boobs I've seen in the last couple of years. I mean, I should clarify, there's been, like... I've had sex with two women, but, I mean, I've done, like, some low-level hookups.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With a few other women.
Yeah, yeah.
Some motorboating or something like that. But, like, not actually having... Not actually fornicating. Yeah.
Look at this guy pulling out all these words. I'm going to have to get a dictionary.
Siri, what's fornicating?
Fornicating. So how does that transcend into comedy? Because for me, I'll say this. I think when I first met you in person, I was maybe 6 months into doing comedy. It was my first show at Go Bananas, and you were headlining. And the only thing I really knew about you was that you were who was here before. So, like, when I first started doing comedy, I was kind of like, okay, this is who's doing it now, but who was here a couple years ago?
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Who's, like, in charge of all of this shit? You know, and I started to realize that it's, like, kind of a battle of attrition in that people die off, people move on, battlefield promotions type of thing. And then I met you in person, and I just remember thinking, like, that you just kind of reminded me of... Every other, I guess I kind of expect you to be glowing and have like a halo or something. You know, like you just got off the plane from California, and I just kind of expected, you know, like groupies to be hanging off of you. And
and it's funny our misconceptions, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I think you come in. They say, like, you know, for however many years you've been doing it, that's how old you are in it. And I still, like, genuinely, like, 5 years in, I feel like a 5-year-old now. But I understand that. So when I see, like, a guy that's 2 years in acting like a 2-year-old but doesn't know that he's acting like a 2-year-old, and so I'm looking back on my life and I'm thinking, like, wow, I really was green, but I'm still very, very green, you know, because I look at, like, you telling this story and I'm thinking to myself, like, well, clearly he's got his pick of the litter wherever he goes. And but is it, I mean, I think that's more of a personality thing, right? Because that's what, like, there's some comics that just pull women to them as part of the drug from the business. Others, it might be alcohol. I don't know who I'm speaking to. Others, it's something that they get ancillary to the comedy.
Sure. I mean, it's out there. It's available.
Right.
You know, if you put it out there.
Yeah.
I mean, because we make jokes, and I know, like, you know, I'll make the joke every once in a while, and I don't literally, and I'm sure I've done it because I'm a fucking idiot dude. But it's like, you know, if it's a good crowd or it's like a packed crowd and there's like a lot of women there, you know, me and like Dave Wade or something we'll be talking around, I'll be like, I don't know about you, but I'm doing my pussy getting set tonight.
Yeah.
And it's like, first of all, that does not exist.
Right. Right. Right,
but it's a fun
joke. Or
you've
been doing it every night.
Yeah. So you mean you're doing your same set?
Exactly. Same
and just hoping a woman talks to you?
Yeah.
This time?
But I'm going to switch a couple jokes around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to smile after the punchline on
yeah.
this one.
And then Dave, I remember one time, I think it was Dave or somebody said to me, well, maybe don't talk about how you got extorted. For jerking off on. Maybe don't talk
what?
About.
Oh, don't or, do my closer?
Yeah.
Is that what
but,
take out the funny stuff?
So it's like, yeah. It's, yeah, there are definitely all kinds of things that, like, with very close within our reach
mm-hmm.
that you can become, you know, addicted to or that can help feed an already existing addiction, I guess.
What would you, do you think there's something between addiction and recreation? Is it like obsession? Can you be obsessed without being addicted?
Yeah, because I think obsession doesn't last.
Yeah.
I mean, I was obsessed with baseball cards.
At what point in your life?
When I was younger.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't remember the last time I even cared to even look at the ones I have.
Right.
Every once in a while, I'll look back romantically and be like, oh, yeah. I was so, like, I would ride my bike in the rain just to go try to get the new set.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, for 2 miles. It was cold, and I'd be, like, scraping together bottles to go get, you know, recycling money to afford a pack of baseball cards. Like, so, but, I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, I think addiction can be harmful, but obsession can, like, psychologically really fuck you up. And addiction can physically fuck you up, maybe.
True. And I think obsession can be harnessed in a way. Because I know when I first started doing comedy, I was obsessed with it. You know, I was obsessed with...
I think you have to be.
You're delusional, probably,
yeah,
to a degree, about how obsessed you are about it. Because it's one of those things where I think, for me, it was sort of like coming out of the closet. And I only say that not to minimize anybody who has come out of the closet, but it was... It's like when, that's our version of the N-word, or whatever. That was my version of saying something about how I felt about myself my entire life and wasn't sure how people were going to receive me. Turns out nobody really gave a shit, you know, but it was hugely transformational for me. And I was doing this, like, self-help seminar kind of a thing where I was going to become this guru kind of, I was going through this leadership program. And when I got really clear about comedy being the only reason I was there is because that would be like being a comic. And I was like, why don't I just go be a fucking comic? And I got there with their help. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they were happy that I left the program, but it was that technology. It was, now that I look at it, it was kind of similar to Scientology in the technology aspect of it, but not in the group aspect of it. But it got me so crystal clear that for the first 2 years, I don't even know what it would have been like to be around me or hang out with me. Is probably pretty painful.
Well, no, I think you have to, and I think that's why crews who come up together become so close. Like back in the day, Chris Waggle and I, or whoever, this guy Heath Galley, who's no longer in it, you know, Eric Snell was a guy I ran around with at the beginning, and then later Dave Waite and Jeff Tate from Cincinnati. But like, it'd be 4:30 in the morning, and we'd be listening to Andrew Dice Clay's "The Day the Laughter Died," Part 2, and I'd be like, you know, and this is after like a shitty bar show somewhere on fucking like Linden or something we were running, and then I'd be like, turn the volume on my stereo all the way up. I'm like, listen to how the album ends. Dice walks off stage and gets into a fight with an audience member, but you have to turn it all the way up, or you don't hear it.
Yeah,
to the point where you're gonna blow your fucking speakers if something else comes on, and and we're just like freaking out, like, man, maybe Dice is like next level genius and people don't get it. Maybe it's all such a deep level of satire that people think he's just a fucking idiot. And then like later you're like, no, Dice is a fucking idiot. Yeah. Like, I mean, not an idiot, but he's just a guy who's doing a fucking character because it worked and it took over his life, maybe. And then now, and he sold out Madison Square Garden and all this kind of stuff. He's not doing some like secret Navy SEAL deep op like satire that someday will be exposed for like he was the Mark Twain.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the great American novel, Dice has the great American album. That's not gonna happen. No, he's calling people fucking retards.
Yeah.
You know? He's defending them in some way on that album. Like, I mean, he's like making fun of people who can't handle being around them, but he's also still making fun of them. It's this weird thing, but like, you know, and it's misogynist. Yeah. You know, it's like, I'm gonna bagoo on you.
It's always been about like what saying what other people are afraid to say.
Sure, yeah, I guess the point is like, but early on, so obsessed with stand-up comedy, that like. Those moments happen where like tunneled so deep that you think Dice is a next level Carlin-esque genius.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, well, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, he was a genius in what he had done, maybe, but like not in the way that Carlin or Pryor or something like that, or Hicks, but like, oh man, but then you have to have that obsession because it leads to a blind spot. You know what I mean? It gives you that tunnel vision to where you just don't accept that not getting laughs for the first couple of years at these shitty bar shows, or just not accepting that, like, oh, the reality of our situation here is we're telling jokes to people who thought they were going to a bar to have wings and a couple drinks and play darts with their buddies, and now for an hour and a half they're not allowed to do that without being made to feel like an asshole by some young strangers or strangers they don't know who are talking about their dicks or doing really bad shock humor because they haven't figured out how to use those tools yet or something like that. But we're like, no, we're artists. Yeah. Pay us attention. Yeah. We're crafting stuff here. So and they're like, my name's Teddy.
Yeah.
I work, I'm an HVAC technician, and I'm just trying to have a couple beers before I have to go home to my wife before she fucking bitches at me.
Yeah.
And hopefully those kids are in bed by now.
Yeah.
And now you're trying to tell me, you know, why I'm a fascist?
Yeah.
Because you think I look like I voted for Trump, or you know what I mean, or something like that.
Yeah. And you keep telling me to shut the fuck up.
He's like, that's why I'm here and not at home. But like, but yeah, you can't like consider that.
Yeah,
when you're starting
that has
out,
to be, you're right,
because you need all of the stage time you possibly can get.
Yeah,
you have to be and come off after that and be like, yeah, I learned something tonight.
Yep, yep. You know, oh, that was good. That was good. That was good. That was good. I mean, it didn't go well, but. It was good what I was doing.
I filled my time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know when you first start.
I wrote that. I love those posts on Facebook where it's like, I did 20 minutes. It wasn't all good, but I got it out, you know. Yeah. And I remember feeling like the first time I did 20 minutes, I knew it didn't go good. I wasn't even happy that I got it all out. You know what I mean? I was like, this is, got it. Like, every growth period I've hit with my act has always come from, like, a huge failure or a huge bomb of some sort where I was like, that can't happen again. You know what I mean? Like, that was my fault, and I can't let that happen again. And I think that blind spot can be transferred too far into the future. Where?
Oh, yeah, because we all know people who should have quit years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, but then it's like, and then some of the people who do quit, you're like, no.
Right?
Why are you leaving?
Yeah.
You're so good.
Yeah.
And then there's other people who are like, oh, you've been telling the same jokes for 15 fucking years.
Yeah.
The same 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man. And, you know, and it's, I don't believe it's anybody's place to tell someone to give up a dream.
Sure.
That's no one's place to tell anyone that. But it is someone's place, if asked directly, about their opinion of how someone else may be executing their dream.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
To give them an honest answer.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, one of the rules of being a grown-up is don't ask a question you can't handle the answer to.
Remember that.
And so I won't ask questions if I don't want to know the truth.
Yeah. Good point.
Like, I will only ask questions that I can
stomach,
I can accept.
Response, yeah.
I can accept the worst possible answer.
That's interesting.
Oh, I need to start incorporating that in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to really start thinking about
it's like engineering your happiness to a certain degree or like whatever you're up to. But I think also some people ask those hard questions, and I get a lot of comics, you know, will say something, oh, can you watch my set, or do you have any advice for me, or whatever. But it's almost always very generic advice that I give people, which is, you know, my number one piece of advice for any new comic is, like, how are you going to dress when you go on stage? Because for me, there's just, like, any number of things you can do to take away from how funny you can be. You know what I mean? And so it's, like, kind of just getting to a base level of not wearing a shirt with a bunch of small print writing on it, where people are like looking at that instead of listening to what you're saying. Jewelry, you know, things like that can take away from their ability to listen to you, especially when you're not very funny to start. But after that, I don't really have any like critique about what's funny anymore, because I feel like I'm like, hey, if that's what fills the hole in his soul is going up and doing that, like, I can't.
I'm the worst about giving advice. I just don't, because fucking it's, you know, I don't know shit. I know that I don't know shit.
Right. That's also
like, there's nothing I can tell you that, you know, that is going to be helpful to anybody. I don't even give my kids advice. My son's a rapper now, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Your son that's the talented football player?
Yeah.
So is the football still happening, or is
he's still playing football.
That's different.
Yeah.
How old is he?
18.
I mean, I'm glad.
Is he going to college to play football somewhere?
Yeah, it's a small college in Fort Wayne, St. Francis. And, but yeah, he.
He's the most gangster motherfucker in St. Francis, apparently.
Well, the. Yeah, it was. He FaceTimed me the other day, and I knew when he FaceTimed me that
something new was coming.
Something new, yeah. And so.
What you want, Pat, tonight?
Yeah, so. So he's like, look, I'm. I don't know if you know, but I've been freestyling. I'm a rapper now. I wanted to play you my
demo.
My rap. Yeah, so it is demo. Yeah, and it's on FaceTime, so it's very hard to control. You know, my yes, and of course
he can see you.
Yeah.
Yes, and he can, and it's. And I kind of, I think he picked up, so I go, yeah, what's going on with football? You know, and I'm like, you gotta be encouraging no matter what, you know. I don't want a rapper, all right? but
it is interesting that he FaceTimed you, wanted to share it with you. Like, yeah, one-on-one, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and.
I wonder what the connection is to, like, because I've had other people come out to me, not for comedy, but for other artistic endeavors. You know, like, I want to be a singer, you know, and I don't know really, like, I know it's not the same as comedy or whatever, but I don't know how to get started or whatever. And I think to myself, like, well, you got to go do it. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only thing I can tell you at that point is you got to go do it. But I think that might be something like, well, Dad had to tell somebody first that he was a comedian. You know what I mean? So him coming out to you as a rapper or whatever is pretty big.
And he goes, I'm going to warn you. Oh, that's how he revealed it. He goes, I'm going to warn you, it's a rap. There's some language in there. And I was like, I think I'll be able to handle it, son. And that's like, yeah. I'm like, I like the cussing. The cussing is... Awesome. The cousin is on the fleek, but time. But he's also tried to stand up.
He has?
Times. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so, he basically like bar shows. He goes and does, and then he says it just. He's like, yeah, I don't. He goes, yeah, you know, I don't think I'm going to keep doing that. He goes, that's kind of your thing. I was like, you have a bad set, buddy? He's like, yeah, it was real bad.
Oh,
I was
like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, wait till you get in the rap circuit.
You know, I drove by a place that was doing a rap thing like that, Dayton one time, and it was eerily similar to an open mic. You know, like the guys were standing outside smoking, you know, and you could tell that there was like people inside doing their thing or whatever. And I just thought, like, how all these communities, like, imagine if we were into curling instead of comedy. You know what
Ooh,
I mean?
I am.
And Ryan was the Olympic curler. You know, and we're like, man, what are the brushes like in the Olympics? You know, you're standing on that ice. But that's true for every kind of thing that's not taxes, lawyering, doctoring,
right?
Pizza delivery. You know, everything that everybody else does. It's like you get into your little community, and you're sort of insulated from reality.
Yeah, and I think at the you know, in those early years, you know, the combination of a, you know, drive, obsession, trying to figure out who the hell you are,
yeah,
in that leads to the obsessive compulsive, you know, doing it. And that's not to say that I don't, you know, I'm still obsessed over it, because I do, but it's like different now 15 years later,
mm-hmm,
where, you know, I'm not hitting open mics, you know, two open mics every night.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, the process becomes more and more refined and specialized the longer,
sure,
you do it. And that's not to, you know, and when I go on a big tour and I'm doing, you know, an hour every night for, you know, a month and a half straight, it's like by the end of that, it's just like, there's nothing you can't do.
Yeah.
It feels like.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about being locked in.
Yeah. I definitely have not had, you know, I don't know what back-to-back nights, how many back-to-back nights I've ever performed in a row, but this summer I did more shows than I've ever done. And mostly in the summer it would be like open mics and, you know, one-nighters and things like that, but I stayed busy all summer for the first time, and at the end of it, I hated my act, but I knew the power of each part of it and how to, like,
hold a piece of my act out, mm-hmm. put a new piece in based on the crowd, or if they're receiving it, moving pieces around in my head while I was doing it. And I just thought to myself, like, this is a whole new level. I need to take this experience to start developing new material because it's a rhythm kind of a thing. I think you get in the rhythm yeah. of performing, you can get in the rhythm of writing.
Someone told me once, I forget who it was, I wish I remember. They were asked about, I heard him answer it. I don't think I asked him, but I was there, about new material, when to try new material.
Yeah.
And whoever it was a headliner, and they said, oh, in the middle of your act.
Yeah.
Because if you want something to live, you give it the best opportunity to breathe. And he's like, what better spot than in the middle of, like, stuff you know already works.
That's a right. great point. I used to always open with new stuff, and that stuff...
Yeah. I mean, unless it's, like, incredible... unless it's just not... I shouldn't say incredible, because I'm getting ready to give you an example of one time I did it.
Yeah.
But, like, it's different if it's an opener type right. joke. Like, the first time I ever came up with an opener joke... that was really good. It knew immediately just because it worked so yeah. well. And yeah. it was the billboards are still around in California. But it was the, hey, everybody, you see the buzz driving is drunk driving mm-hmm. billboards? I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, we all know buzz driving is designated driving. and it's just like a quick, simple joke. And then I go on and expound from there.
Yeah, yeah.
But the first time I even tried it.
Wrote it down or whatever, or thought of it.
I knew. I was like, oh, yeah. this is going to work.
Yeah.
And I tried it, and then I opened with it for 2 years mm-hmm. or whatever it was, because it just worked every time.
Yeah,
yeah.
But if it didn't like work really well, that's when I knew, oh, this crowd's cold.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, well, it was one of those jokes where it's like, oh, if the crowd doesn't like this joke, they're going to be a little tougher to get laughs out of.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, sometimes you just know. But, like, I always loved the idea of trying to find openers. I don't, you know, they're not that easy.
Yeah. No, it is one of the it's. I've been opening with the same thing since this whole year, I think. And it's, but to its credit, while it's not something I'm super proud of talking about, to its credit, like, I had to make a video, a demo video, to, like, open for somebody that was going to take me on some shows or whatever. They're like, they want to see a video. And I was like, I don't have any. So I just went back and I recorded everything this summer. So I was going back through 50 or 60 different shows and, like, just not impressed with any of them. You know, like, why is this? I mean, I'm doing good, but this isn't – I can't send this off. And then I find one where I just go up and I get right to it and I don't let my foot off the brake, you know, and I get a laugh with my opener in, like, the first 10 seconds of touching the microphone. And I was like, that is a good opener. You know what I mean? If you can get to the joke really quick, just right. and get that first lap, and then when that doesn't work, then you start, like, questioning yourself, I guess. But it did make me realize, like, now I need to come up with a new opener. And that idea of, like just coming up with, like, a quick joke that I can get off in 10, 15 seconds, it's like being a sharpshooter.
Right.
It's daunting. Like, I'm having anxiety about the new opener now. But... that's also, like, no one's going to die if my new opener doesn't work.
No, no one's definitely going to die. But to me, the challenge is setting the stage, setting the tone for the rest of the hour.
Right.
And it becomes a situation where it's like, these people don't know who I am. Maybe 3% of them do. So how can I communicate to these people in a funny or, if nothing else, interesting way?
Yeah.
What they're in for.
Right.
Which, to me, I don't have openers as much as I have, let me prepare you for this. I have, like, preparations.
Sure.
More than openers, it feels sure. like anymore. So we're like, okay, this is what we're going to be talking about some stuff that you probably didn't think. Right. Like, about how I think we're robots and all sort of kind of stuff, but... it's going to be okay. Maybe I should just say that at the beginning of my set. Hey, just so you know... everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think we're robots, and we're going to get into it. But when you're closing a show, if you watch the show, typically you can find some way to open that's...
yeah.
That, where you're not even doing material. Like last night, Beth had done something with the mic stand where she had it, like, behind her. Like, and she referenced, like, why I've never done this before. Why do I have the mic stand, like, going up through my butt and on my back, like, and holding it there? And she was, like, leaning and, like, holding it there. Because Beth does that. She, like, moves her body into space.
She's like a contortionist sort of.
Yeah. And it was just so funny when she was doing it. And then she called herself out on, like, why am I doing this? You know? Yeah. So I went up and, you know, said, oh, keep going for Dan and Beth. And I grabbed the mic stand after I had the mic out. And I put the mic stand behind me and I just started doing it.
Yeah.
And it got a laugh.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, this feels really weird. And I was like, I would like to take this moment to apologize to any woman who's ever shared a bed with me. I would not want to wake up to this. Yeah. And then everybody's like, oh, we get it. It's a dick.
Right.
Yeah. And so then, boom, now you're into the set.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that, but, like, you know, I don't always have something from someone else's set to go into.
How much of, like...
a nice touch, though.
And you're definitely what I wouldn't... I don't like to put labels on comedy, but you're definitely what I would call... I don't even know if I'm using the word ethereal. You're more, like, of this, like, kind of... there's a lot of shit going on in the universe, and you're sort of like enlightening people to some of the to like your way of interpreting it. It's like an experience, almost like a trip, I would say. Like, first time I watched your show, I was like, this is like going on a trip, because it's like going into a rabbit hole almost. You're really getting a sense of who you are. And it's different than every other comic that's usually on the stage. I mean, do you ever go on stage and like, oh, this guy's kind of like me? Do you ever say that?
I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
Every once in a while, you'll see comedians touch on subjects that I talk about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, but.
But the way you go about taking them on the journey.
It's strange because my comedy now is so similar to how it was when I first started. And I could not get work. I could not get work at all when I first started. It's because I didn't know how to write a joke really yet. And I had to really like pare everything down, chop everything off, concentrate it, learn how to do clean.
Yeah.
Because I won't be clean unless I'm instructed otherwise.
Right.
It's always a turn off, right?
Yeah, I mean, unless the money's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to do a gig this summer, which was great money, the most I've ever been paid. And it was at the National Mall. So outside, like on a huge stage that they'd built, like, you know, and you could see the Washington Monument to the left. And it was like the 100-year birthday anniversary of the national parks.
Oh, okay.
And so I got brought in.
Damn.
Because of a specific bit? Or?
Well, I think the guy who's in charge of all the park rangers, him and a couple people really loved the United Snacks of America joke. So they brought me in because of that. Because it was in my contract that I had to tell that joke.
Oh, okay.
I love that joke.
And so, but I had to be clean because there's like, you know, it was, they made it a beer garden outside. Uh-huh. So like you had to be 18 to get in. But there's still, you're still outside. It's like 6 o'clock and there's like, so they still wanted you to be clean.
Yeah.
And so I was like, fine. And but it was just like, oh, I'm doing 30 minutes at the top, starting the show cold, clean, as the audience is kind of arriving. And then I host the rest of the show with bands and some other stuff. But it was just like, ugh.
How was it while you were doing it?
It was awful.
Yeah.
But the whole time I was doing it, I was thinking to myself, I was like, I can pay off half my credit card debt with this check.
Yeah. I'm not going to, but I could.
I could. That's what I was just thinking the whole time when there was, you know, but it was fun. I mean, it was fine, but it was fun and fine, I guess, but it was an interesting experience. I'll never perform. You know, I'm one of, well, there was one other comedian on the show who did like 10 minutes. He was an economist comic. It was interesting. Anyway, he did like
a
slideshow.
How was his word economy?
It was pretty good. I mean, yeah. he was pretty funny. But like, so I'm one of two comedians that have performed at the National Mall.
That's really cool.
So it's cool to say that.
Yeah.
But
is it on your bio?
But you know, I should put that on my bio.
I have worked with Ryan Singer on my bio.
Fuck, I'm gonna put it on mine too. I was the other guy.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, that can take some of the joy away. But it is interesting how, like, my style is similar to what prevented me from ever being allowed to have work.
It's like came full
compared
circle.
Compared to, like, what actually got me all the work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but now I have the jokes in there.
you figured it out.
Yeah. So and it's not all just like, let me tell you why God should suck my dick. You know, it was all anti-God stuff. And
I remember when, because when I first started, the first time I ever went on stage, you were the headliner that night. And I think that was Future Legends of Comedy still at that time.
The Jokers?
No, here.
Oh, here. Oh, here. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we used to run a sweet little workshop.
Oh, that's right, beforehand.
Yeah. You ran the beforehand workshop?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun one, too. That was, you got some good shit out of that. But I remember one time you were...
I got that Philip Dan and Dewey bit out of that. Oh, that workshop. Yeah. The Tyra Banks joke I did with the deer hunters.
I just watched
that
this morning, yeah.
That joke... that joke, I was always doing the joke. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
I just remembered this. I would do the joke. I'd be like, that'd be like, you know, a deer hunter.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a deer hunter put in a deer costume. How difficult it is to be a deer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that was the joke, and it never really got a laugh, and I'd been doing it for like almost a year. And I'm like, why is this is funny. There's something funny here. And then... we were kind of just riffing about stuff, and I mentioned it, and then I was driving home from the workshop because we'd kind of talked about stuff, and then I just started doing like the voices, because we had talked about like, oh well, you know, like what would that deer hunter do, or what would that deer hunter be doing, if or who would he be, what would he be saying to the camera, you know, we were just kind of like riffing ideas, and then the voices didn't click until after I was driving in my car by myself. But it never would have happened if we weren't talking about it at the workshop.
Yeah. I've had that happen to me before where it's funny, the two times it's happened to me, Jay calls me, where I start, I'm having like a dialogue with different characters in a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, like to try to find out what the motivation is, like where else can this go? And I think I play it very safe. I think I kind of went, if I'm hearing you correctly, you started off with like this, with a very wide pipe. Then you figured out I've got to play the game, so you kind of trimmed everything down and kind of put it into a format that people.
I went clean.
Yeah,
yeah, that was the biggest thing.
Yeah,
I went clean, how so clean? I could MC.
Oh, that
I could MC any show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I went that clean, and then I could do 30 minutes clean.
How dirty were you?
That
when
was
you first
great.
Started though. How blue?
Filthy?
Filthy.
Filthy. My first closer. My first closer. Closer. Yeah. Oh, well, okay, my second closer. Well, my first two closers were filthy. My first closer, which I retired, and then Eric Snell did it at a party one night. And he's like, man, I'm sorry I did your bit at a party. Now everyone's going to think, you know, if they're...
Yeah.
So people are going to think it's my bit. And I was like, you know what? You can have that bit. It was... This is how old it was. Before the new Star Wars movies were even announced that they were being made. So there was only three Star Wars movies. There wasn't even talk... that they were doing the prequels.
Really?
And I was doing a plea to George Lucas. Hey, if you ever make more Star Wars movies, please let Chewbacca get laid. He's the guy who needs it the most. Han Solo and Luke, they're getting all the girls. Chewie needs it the most. He's an animal. And so it's I do a whole act out of Chewie at a bar talking to an alien woman who and it's all subtitled.
Yeah.
I'm doing the subtitles.
Oh, wow.
And there's Chewbacca. I'm doing a Chewbacca impersonation, and it ends up in the room. Chewbacca's fucking her, and he's long. And it's, the biggest laugh of the whole bit was that, like, so they go up to the room, and the eight-armed alien was like, "Let's get naked, big boy." And, okay. All he has to do is take off his belt. And, he's like, and so then he's long stroking, and then Chewbacca having an orgasm, of course, was funny for people. And so that was my first closer. And people loved it. And I was like, people love it too much. It was like one of these, like, oh, this works too much.
Yeah.
Too good all the time. This is not very good.
Yeah. Let me get rid of
how
this.
That works.
So then I retired it. And then Eric told me later that he had done it after, because I told him, I was like, if you ever hear me do Chewbacca, that Chewbacca bit, that's when you know I've quit stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah.
If you hear me doing that bit, you know I will never be on stage again. So, I mean, I was very, I'm very, like, my whole life it's always been ultimatums. Like, I'll make ultimatums about everything.
Sip,
like, let me tell you, if I ever do this again, you know it's because I'm never going to, you know, that's my whole life. It's like, settle down, relax.
Yeah.
And so then he did it at the party. And he's like, man, I was like, okay, we'll just do it for a joke to be named later, like a baseball trade. And then later he called me up with an idea that he couldn't figure out. He's like, I'm trying to figure out, like, the idea if there's a mathematical way to find out if a woman's white trash. And I go, oh, like a white trash mathematical formula. And he goes, yeah. And he's like, that's a funny idea, right? I go, yeah. It's like, what if your ex, your ex-girlfriend is X.
Yeah.
She's your ex. Plus Y. Like, why do you have to spend all my money? Why do you go around and try to fuck other guys? Why, you know, once the value of Y become, or so X, your X plus why do you do all this equals 18, equals 18, or equals, wait, plus two spread legs equals, oh no, yeah, wait, it was, no, oh yeah, it was two plus nine, or two spread legs, oh yeah, it was X plus Y, when, okay, here's what it was, two spread legs multiplied by 9 months of pregnancy equals 18 years of child support.
Ah.
Right? And that can be, and you know, because that's your X, and that represents your X. Now, when that value, all of that is your X, okay? Now, when that X becomes, and then when the Y becomes greater than that X, like the value of Y, like Y, yeah, y blah, 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 blah. That's when you have to get a new X.
Ah.
That's when you have to now have a second X to make up, to keep the balance. And so I was like, I'm taking that. He goes, what? And I go, because I just kind of figured
like,
it
while
out.
You're talking
like, while we're talking on the phone, I just kind of spit all this out real quick because it just clicked in my mind for some reason. And he's like, oh, man, that would be really good. That'll work. I'm like, that's my joke. And he goes, what? And I go, I'm taking it. This is the joke to be named later. And he's like, oh, you motherfucker.
Why did I call
you? I'm like,
you?
Good premise, but you never would have come up with
this.
And that never worked.
Never worked.
I needed a chalkboard to tell that joke.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it never worked. Visually, it might work in something else at some point in the future.
At a math convention or something.
But yeah.
Eric Snell, he used to be all the time. Where is he still in the area? Or
I have no idea. I think he's in Columbus as a dentist now.
What? He gave this up for that?
For money and...
What? He could be on the podcast, man. He really dropped the fucking ball.
So that Chewbacca joke got me that joke, which never went anywhere. Then my second closer was me literally... Not literally, but I mean, I guess I was pantomiming. Skull-fucking the devil.
I remember that.
And sending him back to hell with without an empty stomach. Because I just came into his mouth.
Yeah. How long did you do that for?
Oh, I did it for 2 years, at least.
Did it last night.
I don't know. I mean, I still stand by the idea of it all. But, like, the idea of it all was, like, how I'm going to bring that joke back. Not the skull-fucking part, probably, but the... Because that's funny, I think, the idea that when I was younger, I was cursing God, and then I got real mad at myself because it was so hack. Huh. And I was like, that's so hack. Everyone asks God to prove they exist. Prove to me you exist, God. It's like, you fucking hack.
Yeah.
You know what everybody doesn't do? Sells their soul to the devil to prove to prove God exists. Because if the devil makes shit happen for you, guess what? That means God's real. And I thought was so cocky that I thought, oh, I'm so good.
You just blew my fucking mind saying that. Like, I was like, oh, that's great.
But I'm like so like... ego filled, so cocky that I'm like, so I'll tell the devil that he can have my soul. I'll sell my soul to the devil. And then I'll know, because he shows up, that God is real. And then I'll just fucking tell the devil to go fuck himself, right? And I'll skull fuck him and send him back to hell. Right? But it's like, well, that's how cocky you are to think you can outdo the devil.
Right. Yeah.
But I literally offered my soul to the devil. And I have gotten everything I've ever wanted since. No, I haven't.
I was going to say, wow.
I drove a 99 Camry until 300,000. Yeah, I need to want. You know, maybe that's true. Maybe I do need.
I'm not going
to
say you're not doing it right now because you really are doing it. But you could want a lot more.
No, but I used to tell people that, like, I get everything I want. just not when I want it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel that way sometimes.
So, and it's like, if the devil is real, what he doesn't tell you is you have to work your ass off to get what he's going to give you.
Yeah.
And that's not part of the deal.
Never seen
that. Yeah.
All that hard work and sacrifice, like, no, you could just, I could do this without you.
Yeah.
Taking 10% off the top.
Exactly. Exactly. 10? Shit.
Or 100.
Yeah. Let me get to, let's wrap on this. I wanted to ask you this because, because you are such a man of the spirit planes, and so many of us have our security in the comedy community. You know, we can just go be with comics and be ourselves. But what's it like during the holiday season when you have to be with family that is, for lack of a better term, straight? You know, and like not into the kind of stuff that we will self-disclose about amongst other comics and stuff. Like, do you find yourself locking doors in your mind so that you don't say something Ryan Singer-y to family or older people or friends of family? Or
You don't show your family who you really are, right?
My family's been, like, almost all my entire family, with the exception of a couple people. My uncle, I don't think he's seen me with my aunt, but he's got, like, major hearing issues. I think for the most part, they've seen me... I didn't tell anybody I was doing comedy for a little while until I thought I could get a laugh, and then that's when I told everybody.
Yeah.
And then my family slowly but surely started coming out after that. So they've been seeing me now for 10 years.
Okay.
Roughly. Mm-hmm. Maybe less. You know, because I wasn't, like, all into, like, come see me, MC. You know, I wasn't really into, like, promoting that for some reason. Well, I should. They would have been glad to. But they've been coming to my shows for 7-8 years now, like, twice a year.
Yeah.
So they've seen me say pretty much everything, whether it's about being extorted. Although I don't really do that joke a bunch when my dad's in the audience because it was at his house.
Yeah. Because he paid them.
But I've had relatives in the audience when I've done that bit, or the stranger in the alley story that I got the first time I ever had anal sex, and all this other, and like the paranormal stuff. And so they know what's going on. I mean, but we don't just sit around and talk about, like, smoking DMT or something, or any, or mushrooms or ghosts necessarily. People do seek me out to talk to me about that stuff, but typically outside of my family. But,
right.
There's all kinds of stuff to talk about. They all want to talk about comedy all the time, but it's like, well, there's other people in this family.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what's happening in their lives too.
Yeah.
But it's so different that I think, you know, people find it interesting because it's so different.
Yeah, it's very unknown.
So it's not a conversation people have all the time.
Sure.
Talking to someone who for a living does this. So I accept that, and, you know, and I mean that's part of the, would you rather do something than where people don't want to know, like, oh my god, tell me about what you do, like,
right.
Would you rather just have another ass job where, like, no one gives a shit?
I
find that interesting because I had a lot of comics play this game where if somebody, oh, so what do you do, and they don't say comedy. You know.
Well, when I'm on a plane, or...
That's the number one place, I think, that
yeah, like, if I'm trapped in a situation, like, if I'm trapped somewhere where I cannot walk away, I don't know how it's going to go. I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth when they ask me that. It depends if this person is someone that I feel like, okay, I can have a conversation with this person, or it's going to, or I'm fucking exhausted. If I'm really exhausted, which I usually am on a plane... I no one talks to me on a plane.
Really?
Because normally I just have my headphones in I sit down.
Yeah.
But every once in a while I do talk to someone, and well, I'll disclose. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, this is going to sound bad, but if it's like a young woman I'm happen to sit next to, I'm definitely going to tell her I do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Just because I'm like...
Yeah, throwing out every credit.
Yeah. But that's just the fucking stupid fucking dude in me that does that. But if it's like... I don't know. I typically sleep on planes.
Yeah.
But it, you know, around the family, there's certain things that the older I've gotten, I'm definitely more Ryan Singer-y.
Yeah. Singer-y is a nice little verb.
Yeah, I'm definitely more able to just, I don't really have as much of a feel. I try not to like say fuck and all this stuff. Sure. That's how I normally talk, but I try not to do that at Christmas and stuff. You know, I'm trying not to be that guy who's just going around and going, hey, what the fuck are you doing over there? Hey, why can you not say that, Uncle Ryan?
Children, the children are here. Yeah.
So I met your brother
at Wiley. I came over to see you at Wiley's. Might have been last year about this time, but I think your brother was drunk. I think he wasn't as drunk as I was. But yeah, there was a big group of your family.
Yeah, they were all here last night. You know, there's probably 30 of them total, like friends and people I don't know who they introduced me to. And
like, no
it
cops.
Is interesting because there is a weird pressure because every year that they come out, it's always in their family, so they're very encouraging and, you know, supportive. But they're always like, man, every year it just gets better and better. And so then it's like, you know, and they bring more and more people. Yeah. And then it's like, so now, like, and we're only doing one show this year. So it's like, and they've got all these friends. Like, my stepmom brought some friends from high school. And now the neighbors in the neighborhood where they live were here last night. And I'm just like, oh, I hope I don't let everyone down.
Yeah. Like, everyone I know.
And now I'm going to have dinner with the audience I bombed in front of. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all day?
Yeah.
You know, they're, you know, but like, you know, but last night was fun. But it's you still feel that.
Yeah.
That happened to me last week. We were at Wiley's together, and I had a bunch of family that came up.
Was it one of the nights with Kirby and Rob?
It was 2 weeks ago.
Oh, 2 weeks ago.
Jamie Utley, me and Jamie Utley were co-headlining. And so I got like, there must be a table of like 20 of them. Some of them I haven't seen in forever. A lot of them had never seen my act, and I went up and just shit the bed. And then they just like hurried up and left before we didn't say bye. Like,
oh my God, it's so funny.
But also, don't you hate like when your family comes to a show? If they sit them right up front, do you?
I don't want them right up front. I mean, my aunt and uncle and stuff, they were sitting right there last night. But like, now it's been to the point where they've been coming to shows too for years now. Mm-hmm. So like, it's happened so many times now to where it doesn't even. The one thing that is on my mind more than anything in those situations is I have to do all new material.
Right. Yeah.
Because they come see me twice a year. So it's like, fuck, I don't have a new hour every twice a year.
Yeah. So I'm breaking out the fuck.
But they don't care. But they don't care, you know? Yeah. They don't care about that.
They don't remember.
Last night, something crazy happened where I'm doing these new jokes about how I think we're robots and, you know, the phone is the robot brain and how it's going to be a million times faster in 10 years and that's going to be a problem. Anyway, and then all of a sudden my phone, I checked my phone to see what, like, time. And this number kept calling over and over again, this number from Kentucky, while I was doing the robot bit and stuff. And so finally I thought, and then at one point I accidentally answered, because I picked up my phone. I'm like, these are our new brains, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
This is why we're robots. And I realized, oh, shit, someone's probably wondering what the hell is going on. They've been hearing this. Yeah. And so I was like, are you there? And then I hung up, and then they called back. So I was like, oh, should I answer it? And I was like, I answered. I put on speakerphone. And then I go, hello, can you hear me? And it just goes, alien robot. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Which my Google number for my podcast goes to my phone. So I've gotten calls like this.
Yeah.
I never answer them. Yeah. It always goes to voicemail so people can leave a story, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm just assuming it's someone from the podcast calling to tell me a story about aliens or ghosts. And so then I hang up because I got freaked out. Because I was like, oh, did they hear us? Everything is alive? Oh, fuck. And I hang up. Calls back again, and I answer. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And so they call back again, so I answer. I'm like, are you fucking with me? Who the fuck is this? And then it was a dude at a fucking table sitting next to my dad, a guy I didn't know, but who had come with him. And he thought it was funny. And it was funny because the audience was like, what the fuck? Everybody was like suspected that I planted it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I wish I was that smart to plant the fucking guy.
Yeah. And this is genuine fucking fear in my face right now.
Yeah. And I had to tell the audience, I'm like, I know. I mean, on the outside, I'm acting like this is all funny. But on the inside, I'm having a mental breakdown. Yeah, yeah. And this woman up front goes, just take a deep robot breath. I was like, that's really funny. That's you said that.
Yeah. I'm using that. Yeah. I'm taking that.
Yeah. Well,
this has been great, Ryan. I really appreciate you sitting
down. Yeah, this was fun.
And plug your podcast.
Me and Paranormal You. I interview people with paranormal experiences or abilities. So I do two every week. One's an interview and one's like a research project. I call it a third-year bonus. And then, like, this past week, I just talked about Freemasonry. I did research on Freemasonry. Talked about that for about an hour. Anything from, like, Orgon energy, whatever that is. People might have heard that phrase. Or, you know, the history of paranormal research. Or so every once in a while, there'll be people who are big in, like, furthering like cryptozoology or Bigfoot or stuff like that. I'll do research on that stuff, and then I just talk to people from all kinds of experiences. Grew up in haunted homes, or they're clairvoyant, or they're a medium. Recorded the first time I ever smoked DMT. We recorded that live with Shane Moss, who's very funny. There's a three-parter called the DMT Couch Sessions. So you should check that out if you want to hear what it sounds like when someone smokes DMT for the first time and may or may not have totally freaked the fuck out. So it's good radio, as they say, yeah. I think.
I mean, it's something I've heard you talk about. I didn't want to start with it, you know what I mean? Because I'd heard enough. I'm not enough of it, but like I'd heard it enough times that I thought, like, well, I'm just going to let Ryan talk about what Ryan wants to talk about. But is that sort of like...
I got to smoke again because it's been 2 years since I did it. And I'm still terrified of it,
yeah.
Even though I've done it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do it again. I know I'll do it again. But,
will you do it with Shane?
I'll definitely do it with Shane again next time. Well, I shouldn't say definitely.
Cause probably the most experienced.
I have another friend who has done it a bunch too, who's a good friend of mine out in L.A. So I could do it with him too and still feel comfortable. Yeah. But it's weird how, like, I mean, you really have to feel comfortable, I think, is key. And when I first did it with Shane and I were buddies, but we didn't really know each other.
Yeah.
And so it'd be much different smoking with him now, because I know him much better now, a couple years later, because we've hung out a bunch more and talked a bunch more and stuff like that. But that was when we first really ever hung out that weekend. And so, like, when his face turns into what I thought to be a fucking reptile, I was like, who the fuck is this lizard person? Oh, that's my really great friend, Shane.
Oh.
No, that's not what I was thinking. Yeah. I was thinking I'm going to forever be trapped in this prison, this eternal prison of fucking freaking out, right?
How many hits?
And then that was over in about 30 seconds, and then I was like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me, right?
How many hits of how much?
Well, this is the way he described it. He goes, here's what's going to happen. You're going to take as big a hit as you can each time. And by the second time, you inhale this and keep it in. And then by the time you're exhaling that second hit, you're going to be like, holy shit.
But you still need to take another one?
He goes, like, what'd he say? He's like, you're going to be like, just when you feel, it was something along the lines of, just when you feel like, holy shit, I cannot possibly take another hit, I'll never be real again, that's when you have to take another hit. And that part happened. And then I got about half of a third hit in before he saw it in my eyes, like, oh, it's working. Because my hand holding the pipe, I'll never forget my hand holding the pipe, because I use my left hand to use the lighter, just like a little marijuana pipe with a little carb hole on it. And it, like, the first thing that fractaled up was my hands right here. Like, oh, almost like a seashell.
Yeah.
Like one of those Fibonacci things. And then I looked up, and the wall tiled, and then Shane's face, and I was just like, you know, and that's when he's like, put the mindful down, and I put it down, and then I threw it off, threw the headphones off. I thought I ransacked the condo. I thought I destroyed everything in the condo because I freaked out. In reality, I was sitting on the couch like this, just holding my T-shirt, staring at it. But in my mind, I had destroyed the comedy condo in St. Paul. And now I was going to have to figure out, I was freaking out how I was going to explain to Ken, the owner of the club, who lives right downstairs,
what you just did.
Why I destroyed his condo. But, you know, it turns out a lot of that is fear of not having control of everything, because I'm a control freak. And also, like, just all the bullshit we've been told growing up. But, like, oh, you do coke or whatever, you're gonna fucking jump out of a fucking window.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, it's all bullshit.
It is.
It's all bullshit. So all of that old past fear that, you know, I was told my whole entire life, you know, mixed in with me being a total control freak and realizing I have zero control of what's happening right now. mixed in with the most powerful hallucinogenic drug you can fucking have. Mm-hmm. And then all that spills together into a puddle of a minute and a half of total fucking freaking out to 9 minutes of the most enjoyable bliss you could ever experience.
That's all it lasts is like
10 minutes, 12 minutes, yeah.
But how long does it seem like when you're in the trip? How
long? So long.
Days, yeah.
I felt like
I destroyed this whole fucking condo here.
I felt like I was in there for like at least an hour, a few hours probably.
I don't think I could do it.
But I mean, it's like, but it's like in hindsight, it feels like. Does that make sense? It's like in hindsight, you're like, no, dude, that was much longer.
Yeah.
But it's not like while you're in there going, holy shit, this is forever, this is eternity. That's not what it feels like. You're not even considering that.
Yeah.
It's only when you're out, like, wait, it's only been 10 minutes?
So,
I've experienced so much. I experienced, I went so far or whatever.
Did you have a time, had any time loss or where, you know, time isn't going to be a concern for you once you're in there? It's going to be a short period of time that you're actually high, but it might feel like a lot. How much of that had you been prepped for? Like, how prepped?
Everything. We talked for an hour.
So you knew
about what? And, you know, he walked me through everything in an hour.
Okay.
And then I hit it.
And coming out of it, you were like, what was the next day like? That's my question.
Next day, I had the best comedy shows I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, entire life, but like, I was on stage and I was so fucking locked in.
Yeah.
It was insane. Where actually I was looking in the audience trying to see if anybody's face would fractal.
Yeah.
And then at one point I was like, and that's when I started just being, and that's when the line came out of my mouth and I started using it ever since. Where I'm just like, I'm looking at somebody, I'm like, oh man, this is the best. I mean, death is an illusion. Only a fool would fear an illusion. Yeah. And for whatever reason, that next night, maybe because they could just subconsciously pick up that I'd been like I was an iPhone that was hacked.
Yeah.
Or unlocked or whatever they call it. Jailbroken.
Jailbroken, yeah.
It got a huge laugh when I was like, death is an illusion, only a fool fears an illusion. And that got a big laugh. And I was like, oh, you guys smoke DMT? And that got a huge laugh. And I'm like, what's this? It's the best! And then I've been too scared to smoke it since.
That's fucking
crazy. I am,
but but it's a healthy fear. I mean, there's, you know, I've never been a big tripper.
Yeah.
I've never been a hallucinogen.
What was your
guy.
Biggest trip before that?
Mushrooms.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been a big, I want to hallucinate, you know, that kind of thing. But
That was more my thing.
Yeah. I need to fucking slow down, like, is my problem. Like, the new year, I think I'm going to be doing, like, I'm doing, like, a real fucking off a caffeine situation.
I heard you talking about doing the 90 days thing.
I did 90 days of no booze or drugs.
Yeah, I'm going for that.
Yeah, and I felt great by the end of it. Like, I had 4 drinks last night, and I don't feel great today.
Yeah.
I had 3 beers and half of a bourbon.
Mm.
So, like, and I still, and like, I had indigestion trying to sleep. It's like, oh man, I never had that.
Yeah.
For 3 months.
I didn't have that. It's funny how you don't notice you're feeling better until you feel bad again.
Yeah.
I noticed that when I...
although, at the end of 90 days, you do notice. You're just like, I feel good.
Yeah. Especially if you've been living your hard lifestyle for a long time.
Yeah, so you do feel... You do notice it. But but it is like a much more stark reminder that first time you don't feel good again.
Yeah.
Why did you do the 90 days? Just to...
I got so drunk in Atlanta that I smoked.
I heard about that.
And I chain smoked for like... 3 hours. I got real fucked up, real drunk, having a great time.
Yeah.
So hungover the next day. And I had 2 shows to do Friday night. That the first show, I almost threw up in the middle of my set.
Oh,
God. That's never happened to me.
Yeah.
And it was an awful show. It was awful. And I felt awful. The audience didn't give a fuck. I mean, I don't know how many times I told them, I'm just trying not to shit my pants.
That's the bar for success today.
And late show was great because I fucking super hydrated myself in between shows with water, which I wasn't doing before the early show for some reason. And late show was great, but Friday was the early show Friday was probably one of the worst sets I've had in a long, long time. And I was like, oh, drinking affected my work.
Yeah.
And I also want to die. And I haven't smoked since, and then I didn't I didn't drink for 90 days after that.
So you quit?
I was like, I'm gonna do a month. This was early September. And I was like, I'm gonna do a month because last year I did 30. I did about 45 days last year, and then on Halloween weekend was when it ended. We went to Joshua Tree, me and some buddies, and I got so fucked up on Jack Daniels the first night I was able to drink that I wasn't able to stay in Joshua Tree the next day and do mushrooms and UFO gaze. I had to drive back to LA because I was fucking throwing up all day and all night, and I just laid in bed for 3 days. When I got like two days or whatever, and
we were just talking about Jack Daniels.
And yeah. So I was like, I'm not doing that this time. So, and you know what? And I'm going to double it. So I did 90 days because I was going to do 60 days, and I was like, well, 90 would be because I was like, I'll go to Halloween. I was like, no, I'll go to Thanksgiving. And I was like, well, if you just do like a week and a half longer than Thanksgiving, you get 90 days. You've never done 90 since the first time you had a buzz at 11 years old. Yeah. You've never gone 90 days without having a buzz of a cigarette or weed or alcohol. Caffeine, all that shit is still in play. But I'd never gone 90 days without a buzz from the very first time I ever had a buzz. Wow. So I was like, I need to try that. Just to prove to myself that I don't need to be fucking buzzed all the time on something. I mean, but then you throw in sugar and caffeine. It's the same thing. So that's why I did it. And I felt great by the end of it. And, I'm gonna try to kick caffeine this coming year.
I've cut my caffeine. And I used to be an all-day coffee. And so I only allow myself 2 cups of coffee a day now, and that's working up to kicking it completely.
I'm going to kick it. I'm going to go cold, but then I might go tea.
I love a hot beverage.
Yeah.
And I realized that cutting back on coffee because...
I love a hot beverage and a woman who's long in the tit.
Thank you. You're defining me. I like a hot beverage and a woman what got long in the tit.
A hot beverage is great.
It is, and it doesn't even have to have caffeine in it. I had a cinnamon something or like with an orange peel something in it last night, and I was like, this is the best tea I've ever had. I mean, I didn't even need to add honey or sugar or anything to it.
Yeah. Hot beverage is great, and
I like a cold one myself.
Yeah. Well, cold ones are nice too. Good half of Eisen.
I like about 30 of them.
I think what I want for myself more than anything is that I want to be able to experience the high in a way that I have not been able to because I'm so seasoned. So if I drink coffee, I want to be like, you know, if I smoke weed, I want to be like, you guys see a dinosaur in the shadows over there? You know, and if I have a couple beers, I want to be fun. But like, I feel like right now it's like, it's more maintenance related. In terms of like just getting myself to like normal operating
age. I tell people like if there were no bad side effects to drugs or alcohol, I'd always be 2 beers in a bump.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I would be 2 like because I'm great.
Yeah.
I love life.
Everybody loves 2 beers in a bump, right?
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
You find me a person who doesn't love me on 2 beers in a bump, and I'll show you a person who hates fun.
Yeah.
And but it's like, you know, you can't beat 2 beers in a bump. I mean, because 6 months later, now it's 4 beers and 2 bumps.
Yeah.
And then 5 years from now, it's like 24 beers in an eight ball.
Yeah. You never left the house.
Yeah. Which is the perfect amount.
Yeah. So it's like, I can't live like that.
Yeah.
And you find that 2 beer in a bump, Ryan, in sobriety or in just natural enjoyment. That's the goal.
Yeah.
And I knew I was okay to drink again, even before the 90 days were up, because it was at a Christmas year-end Christmas party in L.A. where everybody, like 300-400 fucking comics are there at this bar, this club place. And I'm dancing. I was dancing sober.
Huh.
At like 9 o'clock. Just having a good time dancing. And I was like, I'm dancing sober.
Yeah. What is happening to me?
Yeah.
I
can drink again.
Yeah.
Because I can dance sober, I can socialize sober, I can do all that stuff sober, I can drink again.
Yeah. And so what's that been like? Like you said last night, you had 4 drinks.
One beer in, I was fucking loose.
Yeah.
I'm out in the fucking lobby just fucking
glad-handing.
Just my uncles and aunts and people around are like, how you doing? I'm like, I'm fucking loose over here. You know, it's like, oh, Singer had one blue moon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And three sips of bourbon, and now he's fucking, he's trying to hook up with a chick on the balcony. That's not true, but I would have.
Yeah. If she was out there.
Yeah. The ladies really love two beer and one bum ride. Yeah. I can fuck all night, and the two beers would make it, I'll fuck anything all night.
Yeah, yeah.
You gotta know your limits. And I think, for me, turning 41 has hit a point where I'm just like, it's just time to grow the fuck up.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I was thinking about that on the way here. About like having a grown up relationship.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I'll do that.
That scares me. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. It scares me to think.
I'll read a book about it.
I don't read unless I'm in jail.
That's it. Good place to get your head cleared.
Next time I go to jail, I'm gonna read Out of the Shadows. Motherfucker reading a sex addiction book in jail? What the fuck? Yeah, and you need to too.
Yeah, if you read it first.
Sit around, I'll read it to you guys. Yeah.
All right, now, listen up. All right, Ryan, thanks for coming.
Yeah, and, thanks, boys.
Hopefully we'll see you tonight at the show, and if not, then have a great holiday, and safe trip back to L.A.
Good to see you guys.
You too, brother. How long are you going to be in town?
30th. I fly out. So I'm around for a little while, like another week.
Yeah. You got shows lined up? Other than one with...
Just that Milford show I just picked up yesterday for a little bit of money. That's it.
Milford.
I'm going to a rock show tomorrow night here in town. Cloverdale, the old Pearl. Yeah. Yeah. Erica from the Heartless Bastards is doing a set. Erica, my friend, her girlfriend Paige is on the show doing a set. And there's another woman's doing a set. But it's supposed to be pretty good. So I'm going to go to that.
Have a couple beers?
I don't know.
Might sober.
Might have a. If I do, I'll have a beer. I think.
That sounds responsible. Right.
Because I'll be driving. So like, and I'll have like somebody in my family's car.
Yeah.
If it was my car.
Yeah.
Maybe on board.
Hey, put a one of them shovel sled things on the front of it.
Oh yeah.
I'll fucking
plowing.
And I'll just start fucking throwing salt out the goddamn window.
Get some work.
You're driving all over the place. Well, yeah. I'm preparing the roads, officer.
It's fucking 60 degrees, asshole.
You're driving a fucking Audi. I'm preparing the roads.
It's so German engineering.
I'm a libertarian. We don't pay for these.